This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is that time, everybody. Time for our player spotlight. A chance to talk to one of the newest Seahawks. A lot of people talking about this guy, Dave. He's made quite an impression very early in camp, and it's a pleasure to have him join us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Tariq Woolen is with us. How are you, man?
Yo, what's up? What's up? I'm doing good. Just got out of practice.
Hey, you know, as I said, a lot of people have been talking about you, a lot of positive things being said about you. Are you somebody that follows that? Are you on social media a lot, or do friends and family, you know, relay, hey, I heard this guy say this, or this guy wrote this?
A little bit of both. I mean, I really don't pay too much to social media, but like sometimes I go on Twitter and I see my name mentioned in a couple stuff, and sometimes it'd be good or bad, but I just go with it because I think it's pretty cool just to even have my name mentioned anyway. So I really just go with the punches and try to stay off it a little bit because, you know, people get caught up into the social media stuff.
You are wise, Tariq. For a rookie, you are wise because that can, yeah, you just get a roller coaster going up and down. So, hey, tell us what's been, now you're a receiver early on, and then mm-hmm. you switched over to corner. Does that help a little bit, just kind of being in the mind of a receiver, having played that position?
Yes, sir. It does a little bit just because, you know, just like you said, it's just having a receiver mindset, then you go in the corner, and then you're going against a position that you know, used to play. So I just try to use the different tools that I learned at receiver and try to apply it to corner too when I go against certain receivers. But also, you know, you just got to, like, stick to the cornerback technique. And, you know, sometimes you may have the instincts of jumping routes and stuff like that because you may feel like you know what the receiver doing because you've been a receiver before, but not at the same time, you just got to trust what the coach is telling you on the defensive side of the ball and just stick to their technique.
You know, there's another guy who made that switch from receiver to cornerback pretty well. I don't know if you've heard of him, Richard Sherman.
Oh, yeah. I heard of him. Oh, yeah.
and I know he was down there during the mock game. Did you have a chance to talk to him at all? Is that somebody you watched as far as the way he played at this level?
I mean, I watched him a good amount of times, but I didn't really get a chance to speak to him. But other than that, I feel like he's a great player. And whenever I did move to cornerback, that's one of the people's, like, one of the football players, like, film I used to watch all the time.
Hey, Tariq, what's been kind of the most difficult thing to pick up? Like, what have you noticed that's so much more different from the college game and the NFL game?
Shoot, I feel like things are a little bit more faster. You got to actually know your job. And just because, you know, guys are pros now, so usually in college you can mess up on one thing and you'll get by with it rather than mm-hmm. you going against guys that's, you know, been in the league for a couple years and they're actually pros. And when you mess up, they'll take advantage of that opportunity and they, you know, can capitalize off of it.
I've got to imagine going up against guys like DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett has got to sharpen you. I mean, those are two of the best in football. Are they helpful in the way of just talking to you about, hey, man, you know, when I do this, you should do that, or I'm trying to do this with somebody like you? Do they talk to you a lot about your technique?
A little bit. I mean, they just, you know, implement small things that I can like do within reps and stuff like that, but. It's really the coaches. I just go with the guidelines of the coaches and show them that I'm actually trying to, you know, do the stuff that they teach me and just apply it to the field. And whenever, you know, a vet or guys are, you know, they're, you know, ranking in the league, you know, I just try to soak that in too just because they words actually mean something because they don't win against the best of the best.
Hey, Tariq, are you a fan of Hard Knocks? Have you watched that show?
Yeah, I done watched it a couple of times.
Yeah, you saw the one from the other day?
Now the new one, I haven't watched it yet. But yeah. I watched the one with the Cowboys before. Yeah. And I watched the one with the Colts. I watched a couple of them.
So they got the rookies up there singing. And I want to say, did maybe Kobe Bryant tell us that he was part of like a skit or something? Were you part of that, Tariq?
No, I didn't do a skit. I sung a country song.
Oh, you sang a country song?
Yes, sir.
What was it?
Oh, one of my favorite, Dirt Road Anthem by Jason Aldean.
Okay, so you're a country music fan.
Oh, yeah. As long as it sounds good, I'm going to listen to it. But that's one of the first country songs that I had listened to.
Okay.
As long as it sounds good, I'm going to listen to it. That is very well put. Like it.
Oh, yeah. So that song right there, I love that song.
Hey, as far as what you've experienced so far, is it? I'm sure you daydreamed about this moment and being in the NFL and you know yet to play a game, but just going through camp and everything, has it matched how you sort of envisioned it going, or is it better or worse? How do you feel about it?
I think it's actually been going better. I feel like I started off kind of slow, but you know, I just feel like once you get to being comfortable around your teammates and being comfortable with the coaches and you know, you see them actually trusting you, and you just go out there and you feel a lot more free. So everything else has just been going along and carrying along with it, really.
Hey, Tariq, you're an amazing athlete. Tell us about, like, in high school, did you play other sports? Did you run track, basketball, baseball, anything like that?
Yes, sir. I have played basketball, ran track, and I played football. And those are the three sports I really played my whole life, and it just carried on.
Did your speed come about later on, like when you got in college, or were you fast? Were you winning 100, 200-meter races in high school?
Oh, yes, sir. In high school, I had ran the 100, 200, 4x1, 4x2, and a 4x4.
Wow.
Yeah,
So I was on a couple of all the sprinter races.
Yeah.
I was reading this thing the Seahawks did for you, five things to know about Tariq Woolen. And number one, they call it above the rim. So they talk about, Fort Worth native Tariq Woolen, electric wideout for Arlington Heights High, blah, you know, all that. But it says also 6'4" Woolen was also a high flying dunker and scorer for the Yellow Jackets as a junior named to Fort Worth's 5A all district team as well as newcomer of the year honor. So you didn't really just mess around with basketball. You were fairly accomplished there.
Oh, yeah, no. I used to, you know, fly around. I thought I had a little LeBron James in me. but you know, I really couldn't shoot the ball, though. That was the only problem.
But you could dunk it. That's a sure thing right there.
Oh, yeah. All I know is I get close to that rim. It's going to be a dunk, layup, rebound. That's it.
Yeah. So when were you able to dunk? Was that like a big thing when you were a little kid? Like, oh, man, I can't wait to do that. Was that something you worked for early on?
Oh, yeah. I remember I used to try to dunk when I was, like, in eighth grade. And then when I became a freshman, you know, I still was kind of getting hung a little bit. And then sophomore year, it was a lot more easier to dunk the ball. And, shoot, it just went from doing basic dunks to just dunking on people.
Now, was that ever the dream? Did you think, first, I want to be in the NBA, and then maybe as your shooting didn't progress the way you wanted, you thought, well, football's cool, too.
Shoot, like, at the same time, I thought I was a hooper, but at the same time, I knew I was a football player, too. And it was at a point, you know, where it was a lot of different factors. And, like, a point in my junior year, after I got done hooping, I was like, man, I just want to be a hooper. And I thought about quitting football. But then, you know, a couple things happened. I just kept playing football, and then, shoot, I'm here now. So I had hoop dreams a little bit, but once I started getting scholarships in football, you know, those hoop dreams faded away.
Tariq, what about the facility there, man? I mean, you got like a 5-star restaurant in there. I mean, that's got to be I don't know how your facilities were at UTSA, but it's
exactly the same.
Yeah. I got to imagine that's one of the better franchises. That were you kind of shocked by, you know, how many things they have there, like the training room, the weight room, and all
luxury,
that stuff?
Luxury, man.
Yeah.
Somehow here at the VMAC.
Yeah.
A little bit, you know. I had took a couple 30 visits, and I have been to a couple different places and seen how their facilities are put together. And then came to this one, and I was like, "Dang, this is pretty big in here too." But you know, I'm sorry, I'm real comfortable, you know, about getting around the facility and stuff, and just the people here, they all are nice. Yeah. You know, they don't step on your toes and nothing. I just feel like from the janitor shoot to the head coach, everybody's been pretty cool, and I just love the people that I'm around.
That's awesome. Yeah, we've noticed that too. From the second you walk in the front door, everybody's nice. So,
hey, last quick one before we let you go, Tariq. I'm sure you've daydreamed about this, but is there one quarterback in this league that you daydream about picking off?
Oh, that's pretty funny. You already know everybody likes to want to pick off Tom Brady.
Tom Brady.
Tom Brady. That's the mark. That's the bullseye right there.
You get a chance in Germany, Tariq. You got to go to Germany for that.
Sure.
There you go.
So, for sure, that's one of the guys that'll make my whole day if I did that.
Well, let's speak it into existence. Let's speak it into existence, man. Hey, Tariq.
Yes, sir.
Really, really cool to talk to you, man. Thanks so much for taking the time. We appreciate it. We can wish you nothing but continued success and look forward to talking to you again.
Oh, yeah. Thank y'all for having me. Y'all have a great afternoon.
There you go. There's Tariq Woolen. If you missed any of that conversation with Tariq or anything from our show, make sure you check out our podcast page at seattlesports.com. It's always there waiting for you after the show. You can also go to seattlesports.com/Bob or seattlesports.com/Wyman for all of our video breakdowns, articles, and all of the brilliant things that we do each and every day outside of just dazzling you on the air.
You know what else they can do, Bob?
What else?
Go to the Mac and Jack's Brewing Company text line, 206-421-3776.
That's always available for them.
Always available.
And you can say nice things. You can say mean things, but make them creative if you're going to be mean. But Tariq Woolen, I love his laugh. I wasn't even really trying to be funny by asking about who he'd like to pick off, but he thought that was funny. But Tom Brady, a very obvious answer. That I thought there was a chance he might say Russell. I thought if he wanted to get in good with the 12s, he could have said, well, Russell Wilson. But no, in all seriousness, he's a guy that's super intriguing. I mean, runs a sub 4.340. He's 6'4". I mean, he's a ridiculous athlete, and he's, you know, dunking in the eighth grade and all that. But you know, by everybody's estimation, very raw. Is he like Stone Forsyth raw, where you looked at him and go, man, you love his size and the measurables, but boy, he looks kind of stiff and rigid. How has Woolen looked to you?
No, I hate saying this to you. It's a great question, Bob.
Chalk it up, Lefko.
No, seriously, because that's kind of what I expected. I expected a guy that they would, like Stone Forsyth, that they would put on the shelf for a year or two and just, you know, don't expect something too much out of him. He looked really good in that mock game. He got an interception, and, you know, he looks pretty comfortable out there. I mean, not like Kobe Bryant comfortable, but still, I just thought, you know, hey, this guy's going to be, you know, you heard him talking about how he's going to be a project, and, you know, Pete can't wait to get his hands on him and their defensive back coaches and everything. And by the way, the having Sean Desai and Carl Scott back there is going to help young guys like that so much, you know. And I think the former regime probably was not as tolerant with rookies, meaning if they make mistakes, I'll get him out of there. You know, you got to be able to, you know, let these guys learn. You got to go out and make mistakes. And, you know, the one thing you always say to rookies is just make it 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to, and that's kind of what I see.
No yogging.
Yeah, no yogging. And you know, a lot of times that's laziness, but then other times it's because you're thinking too much. So, you know, I think they're trying to get him to just, you know, turn off his brain a little bit and use that athletic ability to the best of his ability.
Well, John Schneider, we saw him, talk to him off the air for a couple of moments yesterday. He did a spot with NFL Network. That crew was set up right next to us out at training camp. And he talked about why they're so excited about the future of this group.
Well, I think just getting back to, you know, the aggressiveness, the youthfulness, the speed. I mean, I think, you know, defensively, you know, we look pretty fast right now, you know, and the guys are playing fast, they're playing confident, you know, offensively. Maybe biased, but, you know, I think Tyler Lockett's probably one of the most underrated players in the National Football League, and with DK, and we got to get D. Eskridge out here as well. But, I mean, it's a really cool group of young guys, too, around those guys with Freddie Swain and, you know, like we talked about Penny earlier, and you know, being able to run the ball. And then, you know, obviously our the biggest thing we got going on is our quarterback situation. We'll see how that goes.
A couple things that he said there, and one is, you know, we're playing fast, and there's a huge difference between we're fast, but we're playing fast. And I think the reason why he made that distinction is, you know, you see guys that have tons of speed that just don't use it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's no good if you can't put it out on the field. So they, you know, the play speed, I think, is going to be a little bit easier. I think mostly because these guys are like teachers. They're like professors, you know. Carl Scott, the way he talks, Sean Desai has his doctorate in teaching. And, you know, when you put things in the right way to guys. It's like, you know, I always say, compare, it's like getting a really good golf lesson. Like the golf instructor says things that just make sense to you. And, yeah. you know, you get immediate results out of it. I feel like those are the kind of coaches that they have there. So that will help them, you know, play a lot faster. And then, you know, the other thing he said is, and we had a lot of people when we asked that question about top 10, who's the best football player on this team?
Right.
You had Tyler Lockett.
Yeah.
I think John Schneider probably would too. You know, yeah.
Condota had him.
Yeah, Condota as well. And I'm glad because I want to see him get the recognition that he deserves. But
except that you didn't give it to him.
I know. Right. I gave it to Jamal Adams.
That's not a bad choice. You're not wrong.
Yeah. One, yeah, I didn't think anybody was wrong picking Tyler Lockett. I'm like, those three players, you know, Jamal and really Quandre. A lot of people threw Quandre in there. There's four guys on this team that you could say are the best football players. And, you know, you wouldn't be wrong.
Hey, before we get to the next cut from Schneider here, just a quick question. And I asked this of Tariq in talking to him about going up against Tyler and DK, and do they ever give you tips? Yeah, hey, when I do this, you should do that. You know, I'm thinking about it like when I first started training in jiu-jitsu, and I would go up against guys who were so much more experienced, and they would teach me that. I mean, they'd tap me out, and then they'd go, see what you did wrong? You put your arm here. Or when I put my arm here, what you should do is do this. And that's kind of how I visualize that back and forth as a cornerback receiver going up against each other on the same team going, hey man, you see a guy take this step, what you want to do is this. Or, you know, just how much did you, and I don't know if it was true for linebackers, but how much is that a realistic expectation to have the veteran receivers kind of coaching up a young cornerback?
More and more these days it's very likely, well, especially at this franchise with Pete and the way he runs things, that you're going to get that from the veteran players as a rookie. Now, like in my second year, there's a guy named Brian Millard who, you know, was always kind of like borderline Pro Bowl type of guy that didn't make it. He was a really good guard. But like in my second year, you know, he would, you know, he really helped me a lot. He would say, like, he's the one that used to call me Norman. He still calls me Norman. Norman Bates, because I had a bad haircut one time.
And you looked psycho.
From Psycho, yeah. But, you know, he would be like, Norm, if you do that, I'm just going to engulf you. You know, you can't hit me with your shoulder. And, you know, you gotta use your hat and hands. And, I mean, he was, you know, really good for me. But usually that doesn't happen your rookie year. Yeah. Your rookie year, but they do that here. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a good comparison with you, you know, with your karate stuff that you I'm sorry, I just had to get that one in.
It's all good.
You had a jiu-jitsu, probably a black belt that you're going against, and you're like, that guy knows all the moves, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of the same thing. And for Tyler, and I think, you know, it's nice having two different kinds of guys. Like, you got Tyler Lockett, who's a small, speedy, kind of Doug Baldwin type.
Quick.
Then you got DK, who's a monster, and, you know, he can out-physical you and all that. That's what my old coach used to say. He's going to out-physical your ass.
One more from John Schneider here. Just talking about this draft and how he felt like everybody was on the same page.
We had a real cool collaborative draft this year, so we had a lot of buy-in from the staff. So, you know, you're looking at the two young corners and the two young tackles and Mafe and you know, Ken Walker. I think, you know, a lot, and that's just name a couple guys, but you have a lot of buy-in from the staff. So that player development part of it, the teaching, just, you know, being able to see these guys and you know, having a staff that has confidence in these young guys. I mean, you know, Richard played right away.
Yeah.
Earl played right away. Bobby, KJ, Russ, you know, I mean, all these guys, there's a lot of guys that played right away. So, you know, you have to have confidence in them and they have to prove themselves, you know, with your teammates over the years, right? Playing with young guys. So, you might take your lumps a little bit, but that step you can, you know, as you project yourself going forward can be immense.
Remember you and I talked to Clint Hurt. Mm-hmm. And he, in the beginning of that interview, said, I cannot tell you how much respect I have for this staff as far as the talent goes, you know, the scouts and the, you know, and GM John Schneider. And that connection is key. I don't know that they've, I don't know if it's anything, saying anything about what's happened in the past, but it seems like they're really together on that. And when he's talking about collaborative draft, it's not just all the scouts agreeing, it's the coaches as well.
It makes me wonder about what previous drafts have been like. Were they, no, we got to do this. No, you got to do that. If they were butting heads. And
well, you know, we've heard the rumor about like Rashad Penny and there was supposedly, you know, there was an offensive coach that wanted him and, you know, which still could be a good move. It's just a little late.
But, others wanted Nick Chubb.
Yeah, and then others wanted Nick Chubb, and you know, so yeah, I don't think you're having that anyway. Not right now.
Right.
And it seems like they all get along very well in that regard.
All right. Again, good stuff from Tariq Woolen. If you guys are just tuning in and you missed that conversation, it's available on the podcast page after the show at seattlesports.com. Meanwhile, Luis Castillo proved that the Mariners already won that trade. We'll get into that next. It's Wyman and Bob. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
The Mariners have got everybody fired up, Dave. I had a hard time getting to sleep last night at 4 in the morning because that was like a playoff game last night. And you know, we're so used, I think as Mariner fans, we're sort of used to being on the short end of the stick of a trade or somebody who left the team and they go elsewhere to become a star. And we always feel like, man, that didn't work out. And I know it's only 2 games since he's been here, but the trade for Luis Castillo looks really, really good right now because I got to tell you, going into that game last night, I was wondering, I didn't doubt him so much as I thought, all right, the Yankees are mashers. That is one of the best offenses in all of baseball, much less the American League. This is going to be the third time in a row he's seen them. The last game he pitched for the Reds was against the Yankees. The first game he pitched as a Mariner was in New York against the Yankees. And then his home debut is against the Yankees. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe there's enough familiarity in this short amount of time where it's going to be a little different, a little harder for him to dominate. And it was by far and away his best performance of the three. I mean, to hold that lineup to 8 innings, 3 hits, no runs, 7 strikeouts, 3 hits.
It's unbelievable.
He was outstanding last night.
Well, and, you know, if you look at, you mentioned his last game against the Yankees when he was a Red, which wasn't his last game, but he had 7 innings, gave up 2 hits and 1 run, 1 earned run. Yeah. I mean, it's just ridiculous against that lineup. It's crazy. So, yeah, more and more that's starting to look like such a great move. And, you know, we've heard from Scott, you know, talking about how defense and pitching is how you win games, and certainly saw that last night. But I never thought that he would get 0 in earned runs last night, just 3 hits in 8 innings. I mean, that was as exciting of a baseball game. And I think our guy Aaron Goldsmith made it even more exciting.
He killed it.
That
he
was
killed it.
Awesome.
Yeah, I had to go Dave Wyman fanboy after the game.
Yeah,
and I sent him a text and just, you know, a couple of expletives like, you bleeping killed it. That was bleeping amazing. Blah blah. What a great night. And you know, he said in his text to me that he thinks that's the most fun he's ever had calling a game.
Yeah,
and that's a regular season game, but that just speaks to the level of it of buy in. Of excitement, of anticipation from not just us, the fans and the media, the guys that work for the team that are calling those games every night. And he's out there on the edge of his seat. And that, I thought he did a brilliant job of just conveying that to anybody who was watching. I mean, that was a playoff game.
You're right. Yeah. I mean, you saw that same thing, you know, when they beat the Yankees prior to that way at New York. Yeah. I mean, it just had that feel. I thought also like the New York Mets game earlier this season where Castillo threw the sliders and they win that series felt like a playoff game. So yeah, I mean, I feel like this team has proven in those kinds of situations that they're up to the task. And then today, you know, you get a home run from Sam Haggerty. And I was just asking yesterday, remember, I was like, do you think is this guy for real? I mean, can he be as good as his numbers are right now?
I feel like I owe him an apology, and I've been raving about him, but I'm like, I don't know if he's an everyday player. I love what he brings, love the speed, you know, praising him, but just going, not sure if you put him in every day if he's that guy. And
well,
I think to this point, he's proven me wrong. I mean, and happy to say it. I, you know, and again, it was nothing but praise, but it was like, okay, we're getting, you know, small doses here and there, but what does he look like day in, day out? And we still don't know. He hasn't been up here that long, but yeah. That guy's an impact player, so much so that the Yankees intentionally walked him twice last night.
Yeah.
They walked him to get to Carlos Santana. That's not a lefty-righty thing because they're both switch hitters.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're not going, okay, well, let's get to the lefty or let's get to the righty behind him so we're not going to chance it with this guy. No, they're both switch hitters, and they walked him to get to him. So it's just, He's amazing. Castillo's amazing. I mean, to face the Yankees as many times as he has in short order, in his last five starts, he's faced them three times, including back-to-back times here as a Mariner. And to do what he did last night was beyond awesome. And, you know, Scott Servais after the game stating the obvious, saying, you know, basically, I couldn't imagine not making this trade for Castillo.
You know, a little different vantage point tonight. I felt like it was actually closer to home plate tonight than maybe it was when I saw him over in Yankee Stadium. I don't know if it's true or not. Just the movement on the fastball, it's unbelievable. These are the best hitters in the world, and they know it's coming, and they can't make contact with it. Even if they do, they don't square it up on the barrel. That says a lot. And he's got the secondary pitches to go along with it, but unbelievable job by him. We'll see how it all plays out, but what a trade.
Remember Blowers, we asked him, you know, if he ever had trouble, and there was a pitcher, I can't remember who it was, where he's like, I just couldn't see.
David Cohn.
Yeah, his slider.
He said he could tell me what was coming. Yeah. I wouldn't be able to hit it.
Yeah, and that's kind of what it sounded like. So, yeah, just it's pretty amazing to hear that. And we've been talking over the last few days about Scott Servais being a former catcher, and it's saying a lot coming from him about his fastball there.
Yeah, I love this cut from him, and I heard this last night, but, you know, they were asking him about the pitch count for Castillo. I think he ended up throwing 110, I think was the number, 110 pitches last night, and it got down to it, like, hey, he was asked basically if you were considering taking him out. Here's his response to that.
You know, do you keep an eye on pitch counts? Yes, but you have to watch the game. And if anybody thought I was taking Luis Castillo out of that game, they're out of their mind. You do not do that. You earn the right to try to see if he can win it, lose it, keep it right there, whatever it would be. And why would I take him out?
You're out of your mind. I mean, he's right. I mean, again, against that lineup, there are certain lineups you could look at and go, oh, okay, yeah, they're still all – everybody in this league is a professional. It doesn't matter. But to hold that particular lineup down – with Aaron Judge in there, with everybody they've got, even without Stanton, this is such a potent offense, and you're just like, you can't make mistakes, you don't have slack. Eight innings, just three hits in that game. That was miraculous.
Well, it's pretty incredible, too. And also, you know, again, you've talked about how you think Scott Servais got robbed last year as AL Manager of the Year. And, you know, making that decision, I mean, there's nothing scientific about that. That's just having experience. You know, we've talked about him being a catcher, but, you know, just being a big league manager and knowing his guys. That's the other thing, too. I feel like he really knows his players. You know, I feel like some of these other, you know, managers that are kind of cocky, they don't take time to get to know their players. And, you know, it's only been a short time with Luis Castillo, but just the conversations that he's had with him, I feel like he pretty much knows his guys, and especially the pitchers.
Yeah, and that goes a long way with the players when I think whether it's a head coach in football or whether it's a manager in baseball shows some confidence or faith in you.
Yeah.
Especially if you're saying, no, Skip, I'm good. Or coach, I'm good. Whatever the situation may be, when they trust you and they say, all right, it's your game. Go.
Yeah.
And it pays off. I think that strengthens that bond even more. Like, hey, man, that guy believed in me, where it looked like I was in a little bit of trouble or maybe I was looking tired or whatever the situation is. And he trusted me and it paid off.
Yeah. And not to swap over to the Seahawks, but that's exactly what Pete Carroll is trying to do with Drew Lock. Mm-hmm. Well, and Geno, too. But yeah, I mean, and it's a good point because, you know, when you're a player and you got a guy, especially like Servais, that's been in the league, been a manager for a long time, and he trusts you, that just gives you that much more confidence.
Well, and to do it in a situation like that, I mean, it was just such an electric atmosphere. I mean, you could hear it through the TV. That stadium was going ballistic.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of Yankee fans there, too. I get it. But, you know, I think that just ramps up the intensity of the Mariner fans when they hear that chant and they hear that "Let's go Yankees!" And you know, I think that just ramped it up even more to where when something positive happened for the Mariners, the place felt like it was shaking. It looked like it was shaking on TV, and just to see how intense it was and how much I don't know, it was just different. It was a playoff game. I know it's regular season, but that was a playoff game. Yeah. Is the way that felt.
Atmosphere. Yeah, absolutely.
That was absolutely awesome. I had so much fun watching that game. All right. Mariners have found a formula for the postseason series, I think, and we're going to get into that next. It is Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. It is Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports Station on 710, and we are just living in the glory of the Seattle Mariners, who take 2 of 3 from the New York Yankees. It's weird how this started out, isn't it, Dave? It's just like the series in New York, where the first game in the series was wildly disappointing. You felt like, ugh, this is bad. That's not good. We were a little disappointed about the split with the Angels, and then they lose game one the way they did to the Yankees. You're like, oh, boy. And then they go on to win 2 of them, take the series, and in the fashion that they did it, I think, is what's even more incredible. We talked about Luis Castillo, and, yeah, he held the team to 3 hits, but that was just through 8. This went 13 innings last night. 13-8. So your bullpen had to do a lot of work. They didn't allow a run. They didn't allow a hit, Dave. I mean, that is huge. And then, you know, Lefko was giving us a stat during the break that Aaron Goldsmith tweeted out. What was the stat?
Yeah, it's from a company called Inside Edge. They track all these stats. The Mariners are the only undefeated team. They're 45-0 when leading entering the 8th inning this season.
That's
45-0.
That sounds like a statistical improbability. Uh-huh. That at some point, somebody in the bullpen is going to blow the game. That you're just going to, yeah, that's baseball. 45-0. I mean, that speaks to the bullpen. I mean, A, it's great. It's their defense. It's everything else is involved, certainly. But you're talking about having a lead going into the 8th, and you haven't blown one yet in 45 opportunities. That is unreal, and it just speaks to how good this bullpen has been.
Yeah, and I had a buddy who's a big Yankee fan. He's like, who's this Brash guy? You know, yeah. What's this about? First of all, what about him gloving that comebacker behind his back? It was like a no look. And then once again,
there's a little luck involved there. I think he just threw the mitt down and went, whoa, there it is. But then he was heads up the second he realized he had the ball and looked at the runner on second rather than just, okay, I'm going to first with this. Yeah,
Bob, you're ruining it for me.
It was amazing.
No, it was incredible, and you're right. It definitely hit his glove. But you know, sometimes you need good luck.
Man,
but
he responded well.
Yeah, and that's the second time they've got the Yankees, and, you know, base running, both were out of the base path, so they didn't, you know, I don't even know if Castillo or if Suarez even tagged whoever the runner was. But, and then, you know, Brash just ridiculous with his, you know, ends up getting 3 strikeouts. And, you know, and I was telling my buddy, I'm like, look, this guy was supposed to be a starter. They decided to move him to the bullpen. The things that we've heard from, like, Ryan Roland Smith and Bill Krueger about how he has the, you know, the biggest break on his curveball and his slider and just how magical it is. But, you know, it's a location thing, too, that's been a challenge for him. And I thought, you know, that they showed a lot of faith in him last night, leaving him in there in that situation.
Yeah, it felt like every moment was huge, no matter whether it was him, whoever was on the hill, whoever was at the plate, whoever was in the field. Every moment, every pitch felt like a big moment. And that was what made that game so amazing and intense and special is just the importance of everything, or the way it felt like every moment is crucial.
Yeah.
And that obviously includes that play. I mean, that play was brilliant. That was awesome. That is, and the place goes nuts. Goldsmith's losing his mind. I mean, it was just, I was going nuts. I'm in my house clapping by myself. Dogs looking at me like, what the hell's going on here? You know, it was just to, in that involvement and being that invested, to me, is there's nothing better than that.
Yeah. Hoover went over and rang the bell to go outside because I was screaming and yelling. Yeah, he doesn't like it. He doesn't like it.
Let me out of here. Let me out of here.
But how about last night? Another score or a little stat is that the Yankees, that team, so powerful, 0-for-10 with runners in scoring position. And it wasn't because they had a bad night. It's because the pitching was so good.
It was. That may be the best head-to-head pitching match. How often do we always look at pitching matchups? Like, all right, tonight it's so-and-so. Yesterday it was, you know, all right, it's going to be, you know, the Luis Castillo versus Garrett Cole premium pitching matchup. And it feels like more often than not when you sort of sell those head-to-head matchups, one of the guys doesn't really live up to it. You know, like, okay, he gave up 4 runs and the other guy gave up 2. Okay, it was okay. This went beyond. I mean, Garrett Cole was outstanding last night. He pitched like Garrett Cole. They got him the last time. They touched him up for 6 right away. This time he looked like that guy that you expect him to be. And Luis Castillo was as you expected him to be. And it was like just 2 heavyweights in there just dropping bombs, and which one's going to be left standing. I mean, it absolutely lived up to and exceeded the hype in expectation beyond that. And then Scott Service after the game, just talking about what an incredible game it was.
You know, we sit here in early August and we got big things ahead of us. I've said that for a while, but to see our fan base get behind us throughout that entire game, and nobody left. It didn't seem like they did anyway. And I'm glad we were able to bring the W home. But been at a lot of Major League games, been in a lot of Major League games. That's one of the best Major League games I've ever watched tonight.
Wow.
The pitching in this game was unbelievable.
He's echoing everything everybody was saying. Mm-hmm. You know, because initially I was on Twitter through the whole game just going nuts. You know, oh my goodness, can you believe that? You know, just going crazy. But at the end of the game, I'm like, that's one of the best games I've ever seen. And then after I sent the tweet, I'm like, all right, is that prisoner of the moment? Was it really? And yeah, it was.
Yeah.
It really was. I know it's a regular season game and, you know, there's not as much in hanging in the balance, if you will, as a postseason game, which they haven't been to in two decades. So, you know, but this is just a pure baseball game. One of the greatest I've ever seen.
Well, and it kind of sucks for Garrett Cole, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you tell him, hey, you're going to go seven innings, throw 109 pitches with only four hits and eight strikeouts, zero walks, and get beat. It's just a testament to how good the Mariners were pitching wise and defensively.
Yeah, it was. I kept expecting, I mean, because there was trouble for both pitchers, both sides at different points with runners on, runners in scoring position. You're like, okay, this is where the Yankees become the Yankees. Here it goes. And they'd work themselves out of a jam, whoever was on the hill at that point. And then the Mariners would be up there. They got the bases loaded. I'm like, all right, here's where Suarez is going to come up with that clutch hit, and he strikes out, and you're just like, and he snaps the bat over his leg.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. How hard do you think that is to do?
I don't know.
I feel like
it would hurt.
If it doesn't break,
I feel like that would hurt.
Get a big bruise. That thing went into splinters, man.
Yeah, yeah. I remember seeing Bo Jackson do that a time or two, but he was just a big wadded up ball of muscle.
Didn't Bo Jackson do it over his helmet one time?
Yeah.
Yeah, just pulled it
in
down.
The knee. Yeah, I don't know. The handle looks obviously decidedly thinner than the barrel, but it's still a big hunk of wood right there.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so, I mean, but even in that moment, you're just like, okay, this is where Suarez is going to, just a little flare. Something doesn't happen. Yeah. You're like, my goodness, this is going to continue. It was just the anticipation of both sides. When the Yankees were up, like, oh, is this where they turn into the Yankees? Is this where they launch one?
Right.
I was so exhausted at the end of that game. It was so intense. And you walk away from it just going, that was so much fun. And yeah, it certainly helps that the Mariners won.
Yeah.
That made it that much more fun. But even if they had lost that game, I would have said that was amazing. Castillo would have deserved every accolade, every bouquet we're throwing his way. Everything would have remained true, except for the outcome would have sucked.
Yeah. And it had a little something for everybody because Seawald plunked Josh Donaldson, who I do not like.
He's got the new punchable face.
Yes.
He mean mugged him like he did it on purpose or something. I'm like, you realize this is extra innings. Nobody's can score a run, and you think somehow he's doing this on purpose. Like, you just, and I got on Twitter and I saw Yankee fans like praising him, like, yeah, he would kick every Mariner butt by himself. And I'm like, oh, nobody's afraid of Josh Donaldson, phony tough guy, clown. His teammates don't even like him. Give me a break with that. Yeah. So yeah, he's a new.
Yeah, you know, I can't stand that guy.
Yeah, he's up there with Bregman now. Now when I see his face, I'm like, yeah, makes sense why nobody likes you.
Maybe we'll get him in the playoffs.
That'd be fun. Yeah. That'd be fun. Yeah, he didn't do that well today either. So that was even more delightful. All right, that does it for us. Want to thank our guest today, of which we talked to Tariq Woolen, who was really, really good. So if you missed that conversation, head to the podcast page at seattlesports.com. Click the podcast tab. Click on our picture. It's right there waiting for you like it is every single day. Click subscribe, as Dave and Lefko tell you every time. That way you never have to worry about it again. Just a little preview coming up tomorrow. Paul Moyer will be with us. Michael Bennett is going to be with us. He's going to be part of the preseason broadcast with Mike Robb. So we'll talk to Michael Bennett tomorrow. And Luke Arkins will join us as well. Talk some Mariner baseball with him. So there you go. Something to look forward to tomorrow. Have a great night, everybody. We're back tomorrow right here with Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports Station on 710.